Hi, this is John Udell, and today's podcast is a conversation with Nathan McFarlane and Benjamin Hill. Nathan's company, Casting Words, is a podcast transcription service that farms out the work to people all around the world using Amazon's Mechanical Turk system. Benjamin's project, called Mycroft, packages up small tasks in ways that people can interact with on web pages. One of the taglines for Web 2.0 is harnessing collective intelligence. These are clearly two leading examples of that idea, so I got Nathan and Benjamin together to compare notes. So the idea of this was that you guys are working in a similar area here. It's actually interesting timing because I just finished up a screencast about the Sun grid compute utility, the dollar per CPU or hour deal. And on the other hand, you guys are working the sort of human end of the equation in different ways. So Nathan, I saw your talk at ETEC, or your presentation along with Amazon's Mechanical Turk talk, and then we had a chance to talk a little bit after that about the ins and outs of your project. So Casting Words is a podcast transcription service that farms out the work to people through MTurk. And then Benjamin, you got in touch with me about Mycroft, which is a word that has a number of meanings, including Sherlock Holmes's brother and Firefox search plugins. But your Mycroft is another sort of distributed human intelligence kind of a project, but it's different from MTurk in ways that we want to discuss. So since I know a little bit more about what Nathan's project is about, maybe you can start and fill us in on the background for yours and start to sketch in how these are similar and also different.
Absolutely. Well, I like that you mentioned the Sun grid computing effort. That was part of the original inspiration for Mycroft. Is we were looking at what Sun's providing and how much they're charging for the storage space. And we thought, well, maybe some peer-to-peer version of that could do better.
So, by the way, they're actually not charging for storage. They're charging for compute.
Was it? I thought Sun also had a dollar a gig a month deal going on.
You know, that's Amazon, right? That's Amazon's S3.
Amazon has a new one, but Sun did it a while ago for backup. Now Amazon's doing it too, and right. Everybody's getting in on the act.
Yeah, it's interesting because I just happened to be talking to those guys, and so you know, your storage is transient and is used by the compute farm, but you don't pay for it, and you don't pay for the bandwidth getting it up and down. So you really are just paying for, in Sun's case, compute cycles, whereas Amazon's S3, you're just paying for storage. So it's actually everyone, you know, all different angles are being tried here. It's quite interesting.
Absolutely. And that HP, they're still trying to get the word publicized, but thinking of it as computons, you've got the network, you've got the storage, and you've got the processing power.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were trying to think of what wouldn't just get its butt kicked as Moore's Law continues to double and double all of those.
Mm-hmm.
And we came up with, well, really, human ability to do work is not going to double every time a chip speed doubles. There's still something intrinsic to what people can do that computers just can't.
Mm-hmm.
And barring any major amazing breakthroughs in AI, that could be the limiting factor coming up.
Right.
So we chose to focus on what can people do that computers can't, which I think is very much in common between our two projects. Mm-hmm. And then we decided to go small scale. What can you ask somebody to do without actually leaving whatever tasks they're already engaged in? And that's when we decided to bundle it up, looking like a banner ad, but instead of asking them, trying to prey on the users for moments of their attention, we try and ask them a little nicely if they'd care to contribute a little bit of brain power to solving some larger task.
So I have not seen one of these in action yet, but I've read through your materials, and I gather that the idea is to present an extremely concise little puzzle that a human could solve easily, but a machine couldn't. And examples would be translate this phrase from one language to another, or characterize this image, or there's a series of examples in the CommerceNet paper, which I'll also link to from my blog when I post this. And one of the things I was thinking about was kind of the difference between the sorts of tasks that you're trying to package up in this highly interactive and what's the word for it? You know, these are like little micro tasks, right? Like you said, something somebody can devote just a few seconds of effort to sort of here and there as they have spare cycles, you know, which differs a lot from the kind of thing that, well, I don't know in general about MTurk, but the kind of thing that Nathan's project is really, and we talked about this a little bit at eTech, that you actually started out with a model where you thought people would just chip in sort of little bits and pieces, but in the end, it's worked out better for you to give people more whole tasks, right, and give them more of a sense of completion.
And these tasks are pretty large. I mean, a podcast takes a little while to transcribe.
Right.
But consistency and also worker satisfaction, you'd have to have a really small chunk to make people very happy. I mean, a Mycroft-sized chunk. Because once you're transcribing a minute, it's not much fun. When you transcribe a whole podcast, though, you learn something from it, and we get a lot better worker satisfaction from that.
Right. And is there even a sense of, well, I guess there's not. I mean, you don't actually, like if I go to LibriVox, I know who read chapter 3 of Call of the Wild.
Yeah, we don't actually, you know, push that through to our customers. We know we can track our workers and who did what, but
right. The
customers don't know that.
Right.
We sort of package a work pool and process management and all that stuff together, and so they just give us a podcast and we give them a transcript, and it's supposed to be dead simple, and it pretty much is.
Right. So there's not a reputation effect here, but yet on the one hand you get paid, and on the other hand you can get paid for doing something that feels like a complete task, that you can feel like you did something worthwhile, you did a good job. And so Benjamin, from your perspective, it's a different incentive structure for the kind of thing that you're doing.
Absolutely, and we've done a lot of investigating into different incentive models here. We started to think of the whole knowledge workspace as divided on one axis along people's opinions all the way to things that are absolute. Like, people's opinions would be tag and image.
Right.
Absolute would be OCR check this one line of text. You know, there's one correct answer versus it really matters what people think.
Right.
And then along another axis, we've got everything from easy, where it just takes a few seconds of time, all the way up to very difficult, where it takes a longer amount of time. And if you can imagine both Mycroft and casting words occupying different bubbled areas of that knowledge workspace,
uh-huh.
It's actually, we're going after different targets, and I think there's, you know, both have a lot of value at that point.
I think that's right. I'll just read through a couple of the kinds of examples that you give in your CommerceNet paper.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do give the flavor of it. Is this image inappropriate for children under 17? Annotate this image with descriptive tags. What is the text in this CAPTCHA image? How much do you like this clip from a new pop song? Which hairstyle makes you trust this politician more? So actually a whole lot of market research survey kind of stuff would seem to fit really nicely into this model.
Yep, actually, that's absolutely correct. Market research is always looking to find out how you can get better data based on a location, based on a demographic, and that's what we've had the most success with so far, is as we bring these puzzles out to the people, placing them in the site, we know what site the people are on, possibly what they're doing at the time. We might have a little bit of demographic information about them. And we, you know, you do things like doing IP address lookup. You might know where in the country they are, et cetera. So that sort of on-demand market research was a big chunk of the pie.
Right.
And then off to the other side, people's feelings about, okay, they're on a blog, they don't really want to pull out their wallet to open the tip jar. Micropayments aren't quite there yet. They're not quite easy enough. You know, hopefully they will be soon. But if they don't want to quite pull out their wallet, would they mind contributing a few seconds of their time towards a task instead? Something that is potentially a higher payout than clicks on a banner.
So this is actually a quid pro quo for the use of a site?
Yeah, we're looking at that as an incentive model. I mean, Salon.com, you have to pull out your wallet to get to the premium content. is it possible that if you do a few minutes of work, you could get to the premium content?
Like if I wash my dishes and...
a less attention-grabbing alternative to banner ads.
Yeah, yeah. So, Nathan, from your perspective, one of the things that I found fascinating about your project was the amount of infrastructure that you were able to use from Amazon. So not just the MTurk piece of it, but also the whole e-commerce engine. And I gather you're even using S3 for transient storage. Is that right?
That's true. We don't use Amazon e-commerce, but we use MTurk and S3.
Okay.
S3 has actually been really good. We keep all of the MP3s there, and we keep all of the transcripts backed up there, and it's been kind of nice. We've had one hardware failure and one machine move, and since all of the external data is, you know, in the cloud and redundant and safe, these things have been basically transparent to our workers and customers.
Yeah, that's really cool. But MTurk is giving you a framework for, I mean, it's basically handling payment for you, right? And
But there's an actual toolkit called e-commerce from Amazon, and we don't actually use that toolkit.
Oh, okay.
It's a technical term, and sort of whatever, it's a brand.
Right.
So we don't actually use that. But yes, MTurk handles all of the internal payments to the workers and all that stuff, and all that's tracked and handled through them. It works pretty well, actually. The whole thing has worked out pretty well.
Right. Yeah. It sounds like it. And what I was particularly fascinated to hear in talking to you about it is that it sounds like you're in that enviable position where you're almost 100% devoted to essentially the business logic.
Yeah, it's so nice, and it is exactly.
Yeah. It's having to do with tuning the sort of workflow and the algorithms around acceptance and verification of work and things like that, right?
Yeah, we do all of that stuff, and other than that, we get customers, and that's what we concentrate on, and the actual working is outsourced, and a lot of other stuff is outsourced. We've outsourced Google Ad text and stuff like that, too, to MTurk. We just do the stuff we're good at, basically.
Yeah, that's a good place to be. So
it's a fun place to be, too.
Right. So from your perspective, Benjamin, the infrastructure is not a given. It's actually something that you're going to need to create because this is, like you said, it's kind of a new banner ad-like model, but something that doesn't really exist yet, right?
Yeah, we hope to leverage some of the existing ad content delivery networks if they can do the sort of interaction that we need, as well as if they can support the sort of in-page or personalized incentives that we're going after. But yeah, there absolutely is a lot more to build. We think, hopefully, it'll give us more of a sustainable competitive advantage in the long run if we're first to market with that. But we're also looking to partner to get a jump start on some of that. But I am jealous of CastingWord's amazing amount of infrastructure already in place. It sounds like an absolutely awesome setup.
It's so much fun and so lucky to be in a place where this is possible, really. I mean, this wouldn't have been possible.
With the amount of outsourcing you guys have been able to achieve, how does the competitive landscape look? Or are you really just continuing to capitalize on first to market there and cleaning up?
It's a weird market, right? there's a lot of old school transcription firms out there, and there's not a huge amount of podcasts getting their transcribed. Actually, I mean, there's a market, and we're hitting it pretty well. Mm-hmm. But we do some podcasts for some doctors, you know, medical podcasts, and it's really interesting because these guys literally have an agreement with other transcription firms, but it's tough for them because that goes to the hospital and it's all that stuff, and they don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Much easier for them as individuals to use us. And so we're going after that kind of market. And our market is it's interesting to see how deeply you want to segment it. If it's transcription, it's a huge market, and we're a teeny little bit. If it's podcast transcription, we're pretty big, but it's a little market.
Okay.
And what are you finding out about the kinds of people who are becoming the regulars at doing this?
Most of the regulars, actually, it's interesting. Most of the truly regulars are making money from their podcast somehow already before they come to us.
Okay.
And they think of this as a way of getting even more visitors or whatever, Googleability, basically. But there's a small subset which are doing it straight for accessibility. We've got some, they're basically in public sector or talking about public sector problems, health, something, who knows. Disability is one of them. And they're doing it just for the accessibility for people who can't hear, which was an interesting idea. And we've got a couple of customers like that.
Okay, so those are your customers, but I'm actually, in a way, more curious about the workers. You know, what you're finding out about who the regulars are there, right? What are these people like? Where are they coming from?
I mean, on the worker side?
Right. Yeah. So who are these folks? I mean, what are you finding out about them? And what are the prospects for? From just a general employment perspective, right? I mean, it sounds ideal. Somebody could devote a fairly well-defined amount of time and earn a fairly well-defined amount of money. It sounds fascinating.
We've been structuring it more as a part-time, and I think almost all of our workers are people picking up a job here and there. A lot of them have indicated that they are working at the same time as they're working on our stuff at something else. Mm-hmm. Some other job doesn't require anything more than a physical presence for whatever reason. A lot of the other ones are stay-at-home mothers or something like that. This is just a subsidiary income for most of these workers, and there are a lot of them, which is part of the reason, I think. Our workflow isn't, we don't have so much that we can maintain a steady flow for the huge number of workers we have.
Right. And so far it's I'm guessing almost entirely English speaking transcription that's going on, but nonetheless I'm sure you have an international population of workers to some extent, right?
Yeah, Amazon makes it a little tricky to do that just because of their payment mechanisms, but we have discovered that in fact we do have an international worker pool, even though it's heavily biased towards the U.S. because of the payment stuff.
Right.
And that's interesting. We have a pretty international English-speaking podcast transcription service. We get, pretty constant but not a large amount of them from Australia or the U.K. or whatever, and our international workers certainly handle those things better than domestic. It's interesting that you can actually tell.
Yeah.
That if a British worker gets a British podcast, the quality comes out better. Not that we limit them in per se, so most of the time it doesn't. It just needs more editing. But it's all these little things that we discover as we go along that makes this so much fun, actually.
On the Minecraft side of things, where are you guys in terms of development and deployment?
Well, we are wrapping up the initial tests of Minecraft here at the Information School at Berkeley. And continuing it onwards, we're talking with some potential partners. We're still looking for the right fit along those lines. And really, I believe the first thing we're going to get done is continue to gather up places that need a problem solved for them. Like, we've been looking at Project Gutenberg and the initial pass-through of fixing the OCR, things along that, but more for communities that are already in existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we found our golden first one to try, we are going to concentrate on that, get a provable positive return on investment number, and then, you've got your typical web startup at that point.
So let's talk through the Gutenberg example for just a minute. So I guess the idea is, like you said, you have a sloppy OCR result that you want to clean up. In this case, it's not... with casting words, it's very much a workflow where the customer is evaluating the result. There might be a return loop where the thing is sent back for editing, and there might be an editor involved, you know. But here, I'm guessing it's just more of a statistical process, right? You're going to get the same thing, the same fragment checked by a number of different people who really have no knowledge of one another, and then you'll just be looking for statistical convergence. Is that basically the idea?
That's what we started with when we thought we would be getting a lot choppier results, and that's definitely still part of it. But we've had absolutely amazing luck with, well, first of all, we run it through a dictionary check.
Okay.
So we just kick out the ones that fail your standard check.
Okay.
And that's this interesting merging of people and what computers are good at. So we're only giving the people things that the computer already thinks is broken.
Okay.
And then the people type in a line, and we've actually found a number of people we've tested it on really enjoy knowing that they did it exactly. There's the group of people that enjoy tagging the images, and there's the other group that, you know, much to our surprise, really kind of get a kick out of knowing they contributed something concrete. And we thought we'd have to go through pretty heavy statistical analysis to find out which ones are correct. But even just doing a two-way or three-way match has been way better than expected.
Hmm. So how can you give me instant feedback that I've done something correctly?
We can't do it the first time. We can tell if you're just messing around to see if it's anywhere close to what the computer thought it was.
Okay.
But we can't always give you instant feedback to see if you did it correctly. We can give the next people, the confirmation person, instant feedback. So there's a lot of fascinating potential for overlapping those two methods.
Okay. And obviously, huge potential for spam as well. So that's.
Oh yeah, that's where we start getting into seeing if it's at all close to what the computer thought it was. How do you tell if it's actually a person attempting to answer this versus a computer pretending to be a person answering the test that supposedly only people can do?
Uh-huh.
So it just, you know, how much you need to loop it back on itself to filter the results. But then you start, you know, same way that Casting Words is talking, the resource pool is just so amazingly huge for this.
Yeah.
That you have the option to set up those sort of workflows that'll self-filter over time.
Right. I mean, presumably you can run multiple algorithms in parallel and let them compete even, right? Just subset the thing out to different...
Absolutely. Yeah. Let the multiple algorithms fight and see who gets the best results. Meta-moderation has proven so successful on a lot of discussion sites. Does this other person, are they contributing valid results, or are they spamming the system?
Yeah.
You know, you just keep going until you get the results you need out of it.
Yeah.
And so we're still looking for, I mean, we have a few ideas around where the need is, as well as where somebody with the funding to fix that need is, and bringing those two together.
Right.
So we're investigating those.
So what do you think is the sort of upper limit here, if there is one? Because, I mean, you alluded to the idea that you want to just take a few seconds of people's time, have them make a small contribution, have that be potentially a form of payment for access that otherwise would be requiring a monetary form of payment. But at the upper limit, this is something that, on the one hand, can engage people in game behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and so that's always a huge incentive. And so the ESP game, I guess, was a good example of that kind of thing. There were, I think, some people that just got addicted to it and wanted to do it a lot. And so there's that aspect of it. And then there's also just the question of, where on the scale of intellectual tasks, how far up the ladder could a system like this climb, right? I mean, is it something that could and should try to move toward more complete tasks and more challenging tasks, or do you think it's best in the niche that you've carved out so far?
Well, I think the niche that we're going for initially is the right place to start, but absolutely, as you say, there are human skills that are more rarefied, the ability to translate between English and some rare language that only a few people have.
Right.
And a few seconds of those people's time applied to the correct problem is very valuable.
Right.
So there's absolutely no reason you shouldn't be going to your favorite blog and getting the choice once we know a little more about you. Would you like to answer 5 questions to tip this blogger, or would you like to answer 1 question that we suspect you might be able to answer?
Right.
And value you more for that. So wherever we can continue to really let people capitalize on what they're good at to keep the amount of time down to a reasonable level, that's what we're going after.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. As you get into more complex problems, there's that dividing line of when is it not a temporary distraction? When are you actually leaving whatever you were doing and working on something? And that starts to blur the line a little bit with what Mechanical Turk's going after.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see how that area works out.
So that's a line that you'd rather not cross, at least at first, it sounds like.
At least at first, I think we should go after the area that, it, as far as we can tell, no one else is going after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got a lot to overcome in the way of people perceive banner ads as these sneaky, horrible things that if you actually click on it, is going to download viruses instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to fight that perception and get people to trust us to say, yes, we're actually working for a good cause, or we're working for a cause that is funding whatever you're reading right now. Trust us. Play with us for just a few seconds, and we won't pop up any windows. We won't annoy you. We'll just value you for what you can do.
Right. Now, currently, if people want to see this, I believe they have to sign up to try it, right? There's not an anonymous participation mode yet?
Oh, absolutely anonymous. The majority of our users are anonymous. Actually, just to plug the system, if you go to right now to mycroftnetwork.com, we've got an example banner ad on the front page that everybody thinks is just an example until they start to play with it and realize that it's live.
Okay.
We also have a number of blogger and site-owning friends of ours who hosted these banners for the purposes of the experiments we ran during school. And if you go to any of those blogs, you can see it in action.
Okay.
If you have a pop-up, not a pop-up, if you have a banner blocker of any sort, of course, you will see an empty space where we would normally be.
Right.
So that's something to watch out for.
Right. And what's the implementation there in terms of someone that wants to provide one of these banner-like things?
Right now, we've got a very academic, would you like to help us test our theories incentive model for putting it on your site? And a little bit of would you like to contribute to Project Gutenberg. But mostly, I think people that are hosting it like what we're exploring and like to help us testing out our different methods. That for us to grow, that's going to have to change. We're
right.
going to have to actually be able to pay people competitive rates that they'd be paying normal banner ads.
So from a webmaster perspective, what am I actually sourcing into my page?
Oh, it's as easy as placing Google AdWords in your page. It's
okay.
A small fixed snippet of JavaScript.
Okay.
That loads an iframe back to our site. We hope to migrate to Flash in the near future for a little more interactivity. But right now, it's very static.
Okay. That's good.
In fact, we've even had some people sign up and host banners that we've never met. Because the whole thing's a self-service model at this point. They've registered, put it on their blog, and are happily connecting us with their users. And we probably owe them at least a few beers.
So the data is not necessarily centrally collected?
The data is centrally collected. The iframe that looks like a banner on their site is coming from our Mycroft server.
Okay.
And when you click submit on that, you don't leave the site, but the submit data is sent to our site.
Okay. It sounds like you guys are exploring kind of different ends of the same continuum. What else do you see either of you going on in this space that is interesting? If anything.
I'm really curious to see if Mechanical Turk is going to implement any sort of market-based model
mm-hmm.
for pricing these tasks.
We're really curious about that too.
Because the same way Rent-A-Coder will bid down jobs, if Mechanical Turk had a bidding period for jobs as well, it would, I think it would very much change the dynamic.
Yeah, and I mean, it would be interesting to see from multiple angles. I mean, we have a hard time segregating our worker pool efficiently and still getting the throughput we want right now because of pricing mechanisms, we think. We'd be willing to pay certain workers more and other workers less, but that's not an option right now.
Oh.
And so there's a lot of pricing issues at Mechanical Turk that could be very interesting to see where they are going, and they seem to talk about all of them, but that's just, you don't know where they're actually going.
Right. Well, the thing has only been, it's been up since, what, November or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were one of the first external hits that was on MTurk, and we put it up on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And so what have you heard from other MTurk users, if you have spoken to them? I'm sure you have.
We've talked with a number of them, and most of them tend to do very small tasks. Maybe not quite as small as Mycroft tasks, but quite small tasks, and take statistical approaches. And they seem to be happy with the system in general, but they seem to be doing very different work than we are.
Hmm. Why do you think that is?
Well, that's interesting. I think a lot of it is actually the marketing from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
At least their initial marketing was very much aimed at that kind of task.
Yeah.
They tried to attract requesters doing that kind of bulk stuff that you could statistically analyze and test.
I was kind of wondering when they first came out with it, if they did it just to test their A7 search results?
Yeah.
Was a lot of the ones I saw originally.
Oh, it was. It was a lot of the ones for months, and the mapping stuff as well. I think, I mean, it's, I don't know, but my guess is that, yeah, they did it largely because they had a large number of internal customers that desperately needed something like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then once you've, I mean, and from what I can tell from talking with all the Amazon guys, their general approach is build a product even if it's just for internal, and then once you've got a product, you can decide whether it goes out or not.
Right. Well, it is certainly fascinating. I mean, you mentioned A9, you know, also the mapping stuff. I mean, from the minute that I saw those Amazon street level, the block level views.
Block view.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Block views, right. You know, I was thinking, you know, I mean, the notion that Amazon is going to directly employ people to go around and do this when it's clearly such a distributable task. Was questionable, right? So I can certainly see that would be the kind of thing that they'd want to be able to farm out this way. And
yeah, and I've been actually pretty surprised at the wide variety of tasks coming out of Amazon. They've got all kinds of stuff. So I think there's definitely a lot of internal need, and I think that's where this came from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's fascinating as the tasks start to reach outside of the computer. You know, can you ask somebody to go get a shot of a celebrity for you? Or, you know, where do the limits lie?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. From what we've talked with other requesters, a lot of physical tasks don't have a really good result rate.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, we actually had, just for our personal interest, we needed to know something about a local building code, and we couldn't find it. And we had to put a task out, and these people actually managed to find the local building authority and find the right person to ask them on the phone. So some tasks definitely do work.
Okay. And at that point, you're getting into, you know, Yahoo Answers or Google Answers.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how the market evolves, really, if Mechanical Turk goes for the variable pricing mechanism, if we hear it, Mycroft can actually head somewhere with the microtask concept.
Yeah, I think that this is just a lot of fun to watch.
Agreed, and I'm sure for both of you guys, a lot of fun to be playing the game right now. It's, you know, you're both in an enviable situation, really doing something that is quite novel. It's it must be fun, I would think.
Oh, it's so much fun! I really love getting up and working every day, even if I do it all day.
It's nice to be in a place where we can say, yeah, we care about what people can do because they're people, and really going after that, and we hope to get that message out. computers are getting faster and smarter, and there's a lot more of them, but still, people can do things that computers just plain old can't.
This is a fascinating deal, and you know, I wish you both the best of luck with it. It's going to be a good ride, I think.
Thanks for having us on the podcast.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Take care, guys.